Hey there, nerds. Welcome back to another episode of Two Nerdy Dads. I'm Jim, and as always with me, we have Jason. Say hey, Jason.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? Good to be back.
Excellent to be back. We had a little hiatus there. As you all know, we are dads, and we are starting up the school year and all that, so we took a little time off to make sure the family was going in the right direction, but we are back.
Absolutely, absolutely, and glad to be back. Been a nice couple weeks off, Labor Day. How was your Labor Day weekend? That was a couple weekends ago, but
I was like, I don't even remember. I don't know what we did. I'm sure we did something.
It's such a blur. Right? So in Michigan, we don't start school until after Labor Day. So it was really kind of like our last hurrah. Yeah, it's like a state law they passed up here to help with the tourism economy. So all the way around, it's always like Labor Day is our last hurrah before the school year starts. But you guys have been back to school for quite some time, right?
Well, we went back to school that last week of August. So then they went to school a full week, and then they got the short week the next week of the Labor Day. So it was weird.
Okay. But you don't go that soon, considering, because there's some people I know that went back, like, some of you out there that are listening probably are like, yep, that's us, way back in, like, early August or late July, and I'm just like, God, I can't even imagine.
I saw some of our friends from Ohio were, like, first day of school, when it was, like, middle of August. We're like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Ooh. Yeah.
Exactly. So, anyway, by now, everybody's back in, and some of that's good. Nice to, have the kids back in school and doing their thing and stuff like that, but, it's always kind of a bummer when the summer ends in some ways, too. So.
Well, what's nice is the kids are back in school, and that gives us the opportunity to do what we were born to do, and that's talk nerd.
That's right.
So what's our first topic?
Yeah, the first thing that I came across is actually pretty recent, and I haven't seen a lot of details on it. So we'll just kind of share our opinion of it. And that's that Supergirl is supposedly getting her own television series, which I think is fantastic for a lot of reasons. One, being just nostalgic for the old Supergirl movie. I don't know if many of our listeners have probably even seen that or even heard of it.
I'll be honest. I bet they haven't, because I've recently tried to find it online, and it is damn near impossible to find.
It did not do well. Not more popular-wise. It was obviously, trying to spin off of the Superman movie, which were recently popular. And all I can remember of it from when I was a kid was that I like Supergirl. She's a hot blonde, and it was
Helen Slater.
Yeah. But I don't remember much else about it, so I'm kind of guessing it must not have been very good. But I'm just excited because the other reason I'm excited is that here you have a female superhero that might get her own series, but I'm sort of wondering, we heard about this for Wonder Woman, and it had the pilot show, but then that was it. I really have my fingers crossed that we're not going to have the same fate here, and they're actually going to go through with it.
Yeah, I think one of the problems with Wonder Woman is everybody has it in their mind that Linda Carter is Wonder Woman.
That's the point.
And that this is what the show needs to be, which, FYI, I've seen some of the old episodes, and they weren't that great. But I think people have it in their mind, and that's what it has to be. Whereas I think there are no preconceived notions of Supergirl, as much as I do like Helen Slater. I just don't think a lot of people saw the movie. I think it's just too old.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything to live up to, so I think it gives them a lot of opportunity to go in new directions. So I think a TV show, especially, and I hate to say this, I know Wonder Woman was only like 2 years ago, but I think since then, DC has proven itself with Arrow. They have Gotham coming out. They have Constantine coming out, which I know is Wonder Woman, but it's still under the DC banner. And they've a little expansion with The Flash, touching on like the Suicide Squad. And so I think they've shown, hey, we have something we can do on TV. Let's see what we can do with it.
Yeah, I think you can make the argument that if Marvel's winning the movie, battle on the big screen, DC's winning the small screen battle, you know, the TV battle, as you said, with Arrow, and you even go way back to Smallville. And I, yeah. you know, that's, I'm sort of holding out that that's where this is going to be, too, is that Supergirl is going to be pretty solid, that, hey, and if they go for that teenager, you know, demographic that they've been going for with Arrow, yeah. and frankly, female demographic, I mean, I liked Arrow, too, but it's obvious that there's got a good female following, yeah. and that's great to see, and so why not have a female character like Supergirl, you know, in that same target audience and go for that same demographic, which is such a, I think there's such a need for that, that they're hungry, that demographic, especially, you know, young women, are hungry for something. And when you think about it, when's the last time we've had this type of a female protagonist? Maybe Alias, yeah. you know, is the last one I can think of. And look how successful that show yeah. was. So I think it's got a lot of potential. And the Superman, Supergirl, sorry, comics, while I'm not hugely familiar with them, one of my former students is. It was her favorite comic, and she said she could really relate to it being, you know, a young woman in her late teens, early 20s. And to relate to that character a lot and what she was going through is feeling like an outcast and sort of trapped and in this new world and everything like that. And I thought, yeah, I guess that might be why I never really jumped on board Supergirl, because it just didn't really speak to me personally. And I think that there's that potential, too, that you could really hit that the young women out there that want something like this, someone that they can relate to and not just think it's hot like an Arrow, you know?
Yeah. Well, sadly, my only knowledge of Supergirl, other than showing up in a comic book here and there, is yeah. the movie, which I want to touch on one more time, because I just looked it up on IMDb, because I'm like, I thought the villain was famous. I can't remember who played it. But so Supergirl was played by Helen Slater. Selina was Faye Dunaway, right?
Really?
Also, I remember this now, Zoltar, who was like her friend or something on Krypton, I can't remember exactly, like her mentor, Peter mm-hmm. O'Toole, also starring wow. me as Pharaoh,
huh.
and Matthew Frewer as who was Zach Tedrum. It's like, this was quite a cast.
Yeah, that is. Like, I am really surprised to see all those names, but...
Yeah. Oh, and of course, yeah. Mark McClure, who was Jimmy Olsen in the Superman movie, so he's the guy that crossed over and was in all four of the original Superman movies.
There you go, man. There you go. Cool. Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm excited for it. I think it's a good opportunity. I hope it doesn't go the way that Wonder Woman went, but I think you make a good point. There's no preconceived notions or, you know, expectations, so let's hope it kind of goes on.
Yeah.
Speaking of and kind of transitioning into, you mentioned it, Gotham, which airs tonight.
Yeah.
You probably, you might be able to catch it. I might miss a little bit of it, which is no big deal. But just quickly, I am sure we'll talk more about it next week, but what are your thoughts? What are your expectations for the series?
Well, I'm nervous. When they first announced it, my expectations were this is going to suck. But with the previews that have come out and the little teases we saw at Comic-Con, I'm like, oh, my God, this looks good. Now I'm afraid, because when I went in with no expectations, I'm like, cool, if it's good, then I might have a... But now that I have expectations, like, oh, no, this might be awful. So, I don't know. I like the visuals I've seen. I kind of like the characters and where they're playing them. I like how Bullock and Gordon are going to be the focus. So, I'm cautiously optimistic, I guess I would say. How about you?
I am similar, except for that yesterday. Well, let me first start with, if you don't know this yet, and you, most of you probably do, I'm a huge Batman fan. So when I first heard that this was coming out, I was like, finally. You know, finally something Batman. I mean, we've had Smallville, we've had, you know, Arrow, we've got all Flash. It's like they've been talking about doing this for quite some time, doing a younger Bruce Wayne kind of story. Then when I heard that he was really young, like, I mean, right after... Yeah. his parents basically, you know, are murdered, I kind of was like, all right, well, then that's not really what I thought it was going to be. You know, I kind of expected a, you know, basically Smallville, but Gotham, you know? so I wasn't so sure. Then I saw the younger versions of the villains, and that it seemed like it was going to focus more on, I mean, does anyone have a cooler collection of villains than Batman? I'm hard-pressed to find somebody who does.
The only one I think is going to come close is Spider-Man.
Exactly. That was my point. Yeah, I'm going to echo that exact thing. Spider-Man, pretty close. But I think I think most people on the street would still probably say, yeah, Batman. I could name more Batman villains.
Most definitely.
So, I mean, that might be good. Then, so I saw the previews too, was getting psyched about it, thought it was exciting. And then I saw yesterday, during football, a short clip, like a sneak preview. And maybe it was because it was out of context, you know, like, you're just jumping right into the middle of an episode. There wasn't.
Wait a minute. I want to get the full scene here. So you were watching a football game. I'm assuming you were watching Death or Lou.
Hey.
Okay, go ahead.
Hey, all right. We're not going to go on that down that road. Okay. I'm still a little tender about that from February. So we're not gonna go there. But yeah, it was. I cannot recall if it was during the Broncos game or during the Lions-Packers game, but as I was watching it, it jumped into the middle of the scene, and it might have been that I'm just, you know, you don't have the context of the rest of the episode, but it looked bad. It just did. Like, the writing seemed awkward. The acting seemed forced. It was like one of the guys turns to Gordon is like, oh, you're the new guy, huh? And he's, you know, he's a bad guy talking to him. Like, it just was like, wow, could this be any more staged of dialogue? It just didn't seem natural at all. And I'm just like, if the rest of this episode is this sort of forced, I'm really worried. Really worried about it. So
that's weird. I didn't see that because I was watching football yesterday as well. And I saw a lot, obviously, just you know, Fox was playing it up, and I saw several promos for Gotham, but I didn't see that one. That's disappointing.
It was a bummer, because it was, like, the trailers look great, but this one, you know, little sneak peek at the episode, it had the Penguin beating somebody up in the back alley, and Gordon comes around the corner, and, like, even his reaction was just sort of like, okay, you're supposed to be like the good guy police officer. Why are you just like, hey, stop beating that guy with a metal baseball bat? You know, it's just sort of like, it just seemed, I just wasn't buying it. And I looked over it at my father-in-law, who has no Batman, you know, bias at all. And I just said, ooh, I don't know about that. He's like, yeah, it looks kind of bad. So maybe, like I said, I'm hoping it was just, you know, you're thrust into the middle of something and you don't have the rest of the context, you know, and maybe it was just a bad choice of a clip or something. I'm not sure. But I like the actors. It seems like they've got the potential for a good show. And, hey, I mean, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. started awful, and then it picked up and got better. So, you know, even if next week I'm complaining about it, it doesn't mean I'm going to, you know, throw it out the window. But whew, I hope it's better than what I saw yesterday. That's for sure. So,
me too.
More on the way of news, Doctor Strange finally got confirmed as the movie that's going to be released in 2016. Any thoughts on that, Doctor Strange?
You know what? I've kind of been busy of late. Did they announce for sure whether Joaquin Phoenix is signed or not?
I did not see that as part of it. I think the only news that I saw that was confirmed was that it was the movie that slated for, I think it was June or July, I can't remember which, in 2016. So it was that slot that I think it was rumored for. That was confirmed. And the only other thing I saw that was confirmed was that it was going to be filmed in the UK.
Okay,
those were the only two bits of news that were actually for sure confirmed. So for you, the Joaquin Phoenix thing going to hinge where your opinion is on that? And are you pro Phoenix?
It really does. No, I'm not pro Joaquin Phoenix. I think he's an amazing actor. But here's the problem. If you look at an example like Robert Downey Jr., he made Iron Man. And at the time, Marvel took a huge risk on him. because he was just coming back from basically all his legal problems and his drug problems and all that. So it was a risk. I don't believe, and at the time, Robert Downey Jr. had made several movies that sort of proved he was on his way back. I don't believe Joaquin Phoenix, now let me state this, he's not having the same alcohol problems and all that, but I don't believe Joaquin Phoenix has shown a dedication to stay back in film with that weird, whatever mockumentary movie he made and sort of the weird things he's got going on. I don't feel he's the right guy for a Marvel movie and a franchise movie. And what the nice thing is, he's sort of saying that himself, and that's one of the reasons why he hasn't just signed up ready to go. So I'm hoping if he does sign up, he's like, yeah, let's do this. If he's not, because honestly, I definitely think he can do it. I think he's a great actor. I think he can do just about any role he wants to. My problem is I don't want to have a problem where the studio has to recast Doctor Strange and all of a sudden we've got somebody new. Because, let's face it, when they recast, what's his name? In Iron Man. Why did I just forget his name?
Oh, War Machine?
Yeah.
When
they put Don Cheadle in, I'm like, it's not the same. The relationship they had in the first movie is not the same. I don't like it. It's really glaring to me. So to have the main actor change out, I think that would be far worse. So that's my only worry about it, because Doctor Strange, the character, I'm on board. Let's do this.
Yeah, I like Doctor Strange, the character, and he's sort of along the lines of like a Daredevil or Moon Knight or, you know, somebody that, like, he kind of flies under the radar, but he's pretty cool. You know, he's a pretty cool dude, and he can be campy, and he has been campy, you know, in the past, but man, he can be awesome. One of my favorite graphic novels, and I don't have tons of Doctor Strange material, but one of my favorites is that it was a graphic novel that was released by Marvel, and I don't think it was, I think it was just released as a graphic novel, not as a paperback at all. And it was Doctor Strange and Doctor Doom, and they teamed up to basically save Doctor Doom's the soul of his mother, which was captured by Mephisto. So they have to go into hell basically and save her soul. And they team up together, and it was just such a cool story. And it was probably the first Doctor Strange story I had ever read, and it gave some of his origin, which I think is great in typical Marvel fashion of like a. It reminds me a lot of Tony Stark, you know, with his alcohol issues. You have this very narcissistic character who's a surgeon who thinks that he can do whatever he wants, you know, and can, it's just the best. And he ends up getting into some sort of a car accident, I believe it is, and his hands are damaged, and so he has to give up being a surgeon.
Yeah.
And he just sort of crashes from there. His whole life is basically over. So you have this hubris, you know, which is a great, you know, tragic flaw. So I think he's a cool character, and he has to rebuild himself, and then he becomes, of course, the Sorcerer Supreme.
Is that the things he wanted as a surgeon, and the physical things he wanted, cars, houses, women, whatever.
All that materialism,
becomes so small when he realizes he's just a small piece in a much bigger universe. When they open the realm of magic.
Yeah, absolutely. Great, just great theme as a whole. And I think what they've been doing with him recently, and again, I've just gotten bits and pieces of it. I think the last one I read was like a New Avengers story or something like that, where he's also sort of had to, almost a Dracula kind of thing, like take on evil inside him and deal with dark arts and sort of, you know, sell a piece of himself away for the greater good. It's been sort of a something they've been playing with recently. What a great concept, you know, and it's something that Marvel hasn't really touched yet. I mean, everything's been sort of this pseudoscience in the Marvel universe with, you know, even with Thor, you know, making it sort of like, well, this is just science, you know, not magic. You just call it magic because you don't understand it.
But that's what's great. They introduced the idea. It's what you guys would call science, but, you know, way back in the day it would have been called magic. It's like, cool, we have an opening. You can Doctor Strange.
Yeah, and I'm hoping it'll just kind of find its own little niche in there, but be something different, because I think it's something that really And it'll be interesting to see how Constantine does, too. I think it'll be a nice sort of little preview of how is this genre going to work out, because I think it's so different from everything else. I guess we had a little bit of it with Ghost Rider, so you could say that there was some comparison there. Just of the genre, not of the quality of film, because I think,
I think that was a 20th Century Fox and has nothing to do with Marvel, just so people don't lose faith.
Right, yeah. And your guffaw was very relevant there, because you're absolutely right. It's not good. I mean, it was Nicolas Cage, too. I mean, let's all be...
Yeah, no offense to my fellow Las Vegas, Nick Cage.
So, anyway... I'm excited about it, too. But I don't think that either of us are as excited about Doctor Strange as we are about Deadpool. I mean, I know you are a huge Deadpool fan.
Yeah.
I'll sort of defer to you if there's been any new news. I've just sort of seen that people are excited about it, that it's being sort of, you know, it's trending or whatever. I haven't really looked into what's officially been announced or not.
There is some huge news. Now, I just ripped on Fox, and unfortunately, I've got to put my faith in Fox, because they have announced the release date for Deadpool the movie. It's in 2016. I don't remember the exact release date. But my understanding is, from the popularity of the leaked footage with Deadpool, which if you have not seen it, do a search. It is awesome. It's awesome. But the popularity of that sort of pushed Fox over the ledge and be like, yeah, I think they can do this, and I think they can do it well. My trepidation, as always I have, is that they did an interview with Rob Liefeld, and, man, he gets a bad rap. I will say that now. I will defend you, sir. He is knocked around left and right, and I don't know why. Yeah, he can't draw feet. For what? I can't draw anything, so get the hell. But he has created one of the best characters of all time, and he's written some really good stories, so I don't understand why he's seen as this sort of joke from the 90s. But anywho, in an interview with him, he said that, yeah, it looks like it's going to go forward, and it's going to be rated PG-13. And that part there makes me a little nervous, because in no way whatsoever is Deadpool PG-13. So that makes me a little nervous. But now, again, what can I say? He grew up in the comic code, and Deadpool existed, so...
Yeah.
You know, it's not like he has to be R.
Yeah, and it might be a hard PG-13. I mean, you mentioned the YouTube video, and I would caution people, if you haven't seen it yet, you know, watch it yourself first before you watch it with your kids or something like that, because I definitely did that and was glad I did, because there's some implied violence in there that's pretty drastic, and I think some language, but I don't remember.
Yeah.
But I think it can be, I mean, that's the thing about PG-13 I've noticed as a dad anyway, is that some PG-13, not so bad, and then other PG-13, you're like, whoa, dude, that was, how did they not, you know, they must have just cut like two or three things to keep it from being R. And so maybe Deadpool will be more the latter there, which I agree with you. I hope they kind of go for a harder PG-13 or an R, because it's really not a character that's kid-friendly. You know, I just don't... There's nothing about Deadpool to me that says kids.
Yeah.
You know? And so I kind of hope they do what they're supposed to do. But, hey, it can't be any worse than what we saw in Wolverine.
I don't know what movie you're referring to. That movie exist? I don't know.
I think that's your Super Bowl, you know? Plot.
But that's the other thing that's got me curious, and it's kind of, you know, we could have brought this up with a Supergirl question. What Deadpool are they going to use? Because people make fun of Deadpool now because he's overplayed and all that. It's like, this current Deadpool is sort of a joke of Deadpool, and it's a wink-wink that Deadpool knows he's a joke. But the Deadpool you and I grew up with when it was created in the 90s was quite different. I mean, he was a smartass, but it was basically Spider-Man with more violence and smart aleckness, and honestly more skill with the blade and the guns and all that. But it was kind of smart aleck Spider-Man. It wasn't him being totally insane like he is now and jumping through literature and books to kill characters so then the authors and whatever he was doing. It's very different now. So I'm very curious what they're going to go with.
Yeah. Across that break the fourth wall kind of self-aware character thing that that plays well for comics and that medium, which I think is great. And I think it's really kind of fun about Deadpool now. And I think they will go more towards sort of the Spider-Man slash Punisher. I mean, that's what I always thought of when I first saw Deadpool. I was like, well, this is like if Spider-Man were the Punisher, but for hire. And, of course, some of our listeners might not know that Deadpool was really a parody of, what's his name? From
Blade Wilson.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's where he kind of got his start. And they sort of made fun of that character, and that's probably where he got some of the humor from, was that he was a parody to begin with. So, but now, of course, he's, like, way out there in his solo series. But if you look at him in some of the other, when he's just a member of, like, say, Uncanny X-Force when he was there, or in some of the other stuff that we see him in where he's there for some of the comedic relief, he's not too out there.
Most recently, if you go back and read the Rick Remender run of X-Force, I honestly don't know if they've rebooted again, because I know they rebooted right after that, and he became basically a female Uncanny X-Force, which I did not like. But and it's nothing against females, but it's been like the characters they brought in, one of them being Puck, who was the only male, anyway. But the Uncanny X-Force that they had with Archangel, Wolverine, Domino, Deadpool, and Phantom X was amazing, and Deadpool in that story, it's probably the best I've seen him written in a long time. Other than if you go way back to when he first came out and he had an original one-off four-issue arc, which was fantastic, his own, where he was basically just an assassin for hire, which was amazing. And then he had his own series there in the early 90s. I think it was Mark Waid who wrote it? I can't remember who wrote it.
It wouldn't surprise me, But that guy's written everything.
It was really good, and I was floored, and he got his best friend, blind old woman, I can't remember her name, but she was fantastic, and then his little buddy who made all the gadgets, Weasel. It was a great, great series. I highly recommend it. But I hope that they go more that route, because I can't remember the blind old woman's name, but she kept him grounded, as grounded as you can be. And really, his origins are pretty cool, if you don't know. He's part of the Weapon X program after the Maverick Wolverine Sabretooth went through. And they kind of experimented on him more so, I think, than they did the Wolverine. And that he had cancer, and they're like, all right, dude, you're going to die. Let's do this up and see what happens. And that's what led to his insanity. So I'm very curious how they're going to do this movie.
Yeah, and I think that's what captured him as a character. He's the guy with nothing to lose, you know, and that's what makes him so enjoyable. And I think, like anything with this movie, it's all going to come down to the writing. I mean, all the things you were talking about, it all comes to, how's the writing, especially with his dialogue and stuff. And if that little YouTube preview or test run or whatever, beta, whatever you want to call that, is any indication, I think it might be pretty good.
It shows Ryan Reynolds can do it. I want to see him do it. I really do.
That was one of the most disappointing things about his appearance in Wolverine, was that you had the perfect actor for the part, but you just didn't let it be. You didn't let it be what it could have been.
Yeah. It started fine, but when he shows up on that nuclear reactor, with no mouth, what is that? Not that I've seen
that. Yeah. No. What are you talking about? Right. Two other pieces of news, and they're both birthdays that happened this last week. Adam West's birthday. And I apologize. I don't have the number, which Adam's probably happy I'm not sharing the number there.
But we
talked about Meriwether as Catwoman and her birthday, and I think we got to mention Adam West, and not only as Batman, which, of course, he is Batman. Like, that's what he'll always be known for. I love Adam West now. Is there anyone who is more self-deprecating than Adam West? I can't think of anyone.
He has benefited more than anybody that I can think of from nerd culture.
Yeah.
Because he sort of sadly died a slow death after that show got canceled, because that's not all anybody ever saw him as. But then with the reinvention of, not the reinvention, but the discovery, I guess, of nerd culture in the 90s, you could say, like, Nick at Night is bringing back the Batman series. That dude is everywhere. I hear his voice on almost every single animation doing something.
Yeah.
Sometimes playing a version of himself. And it's awesome. It's awesome. I'm so glad he's finally, you know, in the later years of his life, he's finally able to get back to some kind of fame. Because he's an awesome dude.
Well, and I think the key was is he's willing to make fun of himself. And that is what makes him so very likable. And you know, even as I love him as the mayor in Family Guy, you know,
yes, exactly.
And I'm not even a huge Family Guy fan, but I love him. And I just think, like, this is great. He can make fun of himself, and I think that was the key. Whereas, like, you look at William Shatner, for example.
Thank you.
William
I was
Shatner,
just going to say that.
Great. You know, they're pretty comparable. I mean, Captain Kirk yep. And, you know, and the rest. And he had other things, even after Kirk, that, you know, were successful. But he, you know, and I'm not against William Shatner. I don't hate on the guy or anything. But he doesn't, I think
no.
He takes himself more seriously than West does. And West is just, I think he's proud of what he did. And he loves Batman and loves that series. And I think he has a right to be proud of that.
Yep.
But he also knows that it's comedy gold, you know, and he might as well, you know, make fun of himself and enjoy it and be okay with it. Whereas you get the sense, you know, that Shatner still thinks he's Captain Kirk, you know.
Every time I read an article about him, it's usually something about his old cast is quote unquote friends. Are just saying what a not cool guy he is, and how he would demand some of the weirdest, strangest things, and kind of made life on set miserable. And it's like, yeah, that means you're a jerk, dude.
Yeah, sounds like it. Sounds like it. So, happy birthday to Adam West, who seems like a very cool dude, and certainly is an epic part of the Batman mythos for sure. The other birthday that we've had recently in the last couple of days is Stephen King, and I thought maybe you'd say a few words about him. That is much more up your alley than mine, although I am a Stephen King fan. I'm not as much of a horror fan as you are, sir.
Well, it's kind of cool. I mean, in a good way, because he survived, but when he got hit by a car a long time ago now, 13 years or so ago, we had a guest at Ohio University School of Film by the name of Tom Savini. Tom Savini is a huge makeup and effects guy in the horror industry, but he's also, if you've ever seen From Dusk Till Dawn, he's Sex Machine. He's not a great actor, he's a fun actor, but he's awesome at effects. He is good friends with Stephen King. Mm-hmm. So we're in our sound class, because he was friends with my sound teacher, John Butler, who's an awesome guy. But he's showing us little easy tricks to do for effects on really low-budget films. And he all of a sudden got a message that Stephen King was in a car accident. And took the message and read it and was like, oh, my God, Stephen King got hit by a car and he was walking in the road reading a book. And we're all, what? That's not what I would imagine as a car accident. He goes, oh,
yeah.
I told him this because that's what he does. He does that all the time. It's weird. And so it was interesting to have sort of first-hand knowledge right there, because immediately you think car accident, it's like, oh, my God, you know, was there a drunk driver?
Yeah. Right.
King was walking around in the middle of the road reading a book, and he got hit by a car.
Right.
It's really weird. So that's my sort of second-hand, first-hand story of Stephen King. But as far as the movies go, book. I've read a lot of his earlier work. I really love Salem's Lot. It's one of the best books I've ever read. I love that book. I reread it every once in a while. It was a fantastic book. I wasn't thrilled with the ending, but the building up of Pennywise and him as a crazy, murdering clown is basically everybody's nightmare what a clown could be. Then little things like The Mist, which is just a short story.
Yeah.
The Mist was amazing. And then the movie itself did pretty good making that short story into a feature-length film. I thought that was pretty good. Needful Things was another book that I think was underrated. Monkey Shine was another short story, which was great. The Shining, obviously, was a fantastic. It's different from the movie, but the book was still great. But again, these are, I haven't read a lot of his newer things, so I'm sort of, not intentionally, it's just his books are so long, it's hard to get through. But Misery, oh my God, it's almost really accurate from what the movie did, the main one being not a sledgehammer that gets him with an axe, but just a stump left. So it's like, oh my God, awful.
Yeah.
But favorite stories about him in filmmaking is he directed Max and Loader Drive. It's not a great movie, it's not an awful movie, but he had no idea what he was doing. So he still scenes where the truck is supposed to be chasing a kid on a bike, except that he filmed it so it would look like, if you put it together the way it was, that the bike is actually running right into the kid on the bike, and they're like, no, it's supposed to be chasing, because you didn't film it, you know, the left to right screen, sort of like stage left to stage right. So they had to reverse some of the shots so it looked funny when there was writing in there, but that's all they could do because they couldn't refilm it. But
that's awesome.
That's so cool. But he's just an amazing writer, an amazing man. He is totally open to giving out why he's a successful writer, helping people.
Yeah.
In film school, we had one of my good friends wanted to shoot one of his short stories. I can't remember which one. Something about a haunted car with Matt Christie. But he wrote, Stephen King said, yeah, sure, pay me $1. $1, and you can have the rights for a year.
That's great. And yeah, like, I was going to, wow, go ahead.
No, I was just like, I was like, wow, who is famous would actually do that? Here, take my story, you film anything, any way you want. All you're going to have to do is pay $1. You can do what you want. It's yours.
Yeah. Yeah, not William Shatner. No.
No, we're just
dreaming William Shatner today.
I've never seen Tech Wars on short film.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, I am not a huge Stephen King fan by any stretch of the imagination. Love Misery, the film. Mm-hmm. Haven't read the book. Love The Shawshank Redemption.
Yes.
Which is based on a short story. Green Mile's pretty good. I like that pretty well. Stand By Me. Yeah, I mean, and some people, like, you hear Stephen King and you think horror, you know, but there is so much, he's so much more versatile than that. And I think you hit the nail on the head in that he's, his love for the craft, I think, is what's the most impressive about him. And you hit it on all those fronts. Like, I mean, he's reading a book when he's hit by a car, you know.
Yeah.
He lets some student film something for $1, you know, one of his, make a film of his short story. You know, he writes all kinds of different things and doesn't just stick to what makes him money, you know. And I think his personal story about drug addiction and stuff is pretty intense, too, and a pretty good story that if you get a chance to look into that and look up some of his writings on that and interviews and so forth, he's got some good things to say about, you know, addiction and how he dealt with that, which I think is pretty cool, too.
Yeah, he's very open. And his son's a very talented writer, Joe Hill.
I didn't know that.
Lock and Key, the comic book. Yep.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Very cool. And to speak on the comic book front, too, Dark Tower, you know, Stephen King is kind of a, I never read it, but I have always been interested in picking it up because it just seems like such a cool idea of this sort of supernatural Western kind of a thing.
Yeah, I haven't heard of anything recently, but supposedly Ron Howard's making a movie.
Oh, yeah, cool. Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. Well, that covers our news, which it's been a lot of news because we've been gone for weeks and weeks and weeks. So let's go to our recommendations. Let's start with our family recommendations. Do you want to start or you want me to?
Why don't you go ahead.
Okay. My family recommendation is actually something that I was able to do with my family, and we do it every year. And so I recommend, and I don't know, you have to tell me if you have something like this out where you're at, but there is a Renaissance Festival up here every year, and I know that there was one in Colorado when I used to live there. And I'm not sure if every state has a Renaissance Festival, but we've gone to the one at Michigan ever since we moved back here, and really enjoy it. I just think it's a fun opportunity. It's different than anything else. It's kind of its own niche, you know. It's got amusement park rides. It's got, like, archery. It's got jousting that you can watch. And everybody just gets into it, and there's a lot of volunteers that are just performers, and there's professionals that are there, and it's just kind of fun. There's cosplay, kind of like Comic-Con is, but it's just sort of its own thing. And I just want to throw that out there. If you are into Comic-Cons and nerdy stuff like that, and you just have never kind of thought about going to the Renaissance Festival, give it a shot, because I think you like it, and those worlds kind of cross over pretty nicely.
Cool.
Do you guys have one? I was trying to think, like, do they have that in the desert? I don't know how you would, like, recreate it, because it's always an outdoor thing, and it's in the woods in Michigan, you know, and it was in the mountains in Colorado. Like, would they have that in the desert? Would that work?
Well, I don't want to rain on your parade. We do.
Okay.
It's
okay.
Every July, my dad comes out usually about the July 4th area, and he comes out, and somehow there's nothing going on that weekend but the Ren Fair. So we always end up at the Ren Fair, and I just pray that the one in Michigan is way better than the one in Las Vegas. Because now it might be heat, because, you know, by the early July here, we're definitely triple digits. And walking outside,
yes,
and it's not covered or anything.
No.
I hate our Ren Fair. I can't describe why. I think it's because they maybe take it a little too serious, and I'm talking about the actors, because they're like, what is that thing you were pointing at me with a lens? And it's like, yeah, dude,
oh,
I see your cell phone. Calm down, okay?
Yeah, ah, that's a bit much. Yeah.
And so those little things bug me, but I do. I really enjoy the archery. They do have a lot of cool little shops and gadget things. They have a lot of great entertainers and, like, I guess street performers, I would say, where they do some nice juggling tricks, some nice magic tricks and stuff like that. But having it here in the middle of July or early July is the worst thing in the world, and it clearly makes this nerd angry.
That is hilarious. Because, yeah, that is a bit much. It's sort of like the Family Guy version of that, where it's, you know, these people who take it way too seriously and are all harsh on technology. No, that is not the case in Michigan, and I think part of it has to be the fact that it's just, like, July in Vegas, like, everyone should just live underground, I would imagine.
Oh, we stay inside. We stay inside of this lovely, beautiful air conditioning.
Right, and that's why I was also wondering. I was like the desert, that doesn't really transfer well to, like, you know, medieval England. It just doesn't seem to work. So, okay, if you're in the desert region, then be a little more wary. But if you're not, I know that the experiences I've had in two different states have been good ones. There's always a guy that insults you, and you get to throw tomatoes at him. The Queen of England. There's always an Elizabethan Queen of England there, Queen Elizabeth, at the one in Michigan, and it's the same actress, and she's fantastic. And it's much more laid back, I guess, than the one that sounds like they're a little too. It's the heat. I think we're just going to say that's the reason.
I would agree.
My kids loved it. They got to ride a camel. You know, there's all kinds of crazy stuff that you can do there that really you don't really see anywhere else. And you still get to do the whole costume thing. And I don't know. I thought it was fun. So if you're in Michigan, definitely go to the Michigan Ren Fest for sure. So how about you? What's your family recommendation?
Well, it was a couple of weeks. Actually, it was last week. We try and have family movie night every Friday where we order pizza and we watch a movie. And the kids are getting old enough to watch some of our favorite movies growing up, or we were a little older. We recently had them watch Ghostbusters, which was awesome. I was really excited for that. But the one that got me that I was really surprised they enjoyed, and I was happily surprised they enjoyed it, and it was a nice revisiting because you and I had mentioned it recently because of this specific actor in it, is Jumanji. And watching it with the kids again and then seeing Robin Williams act again, because I'd forgotten how good he is at it. And he's just amazing. It was great to watch the kids watch this movie and see the wonder and all the animals and everything that's coming out of the book, the hunter coming out of the book. Oh, it was so cool to watch when their excitement and their nervousness and their fear, but then everything turned out okay, and then they even saved the kids at the end and the parents, and it was just so cool to see that excitement, so much so that my son built his own Jumanji game, and my daughter walks around with the iPad, you know, a week later, still watching Jumanji, and it's like, that's cool. So I would say, if you have not seen it, or your kids have not seen it, go back and watch Jumanji. It's on Netflix right now. And it's funny because I believe it was 99. It was older than I thought it was. I was surprised.
Yeah.
And the graphics were pretty not great by today's standards.
Yeah.
Pretty good for when they were made, because, I mean, we're talking minutes there. And I'm like, wow, that's not bad. That's not awful. So it was fun to see that. And they also included, I guess it was a good thing, pre-Phantom Menace, they included some real, like, animatronic effects, too, that worked out well. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you did that, because I had forgotten about that one for a while, and I'll have to put that on the list of things to watch with the kids. It's always nice, and we said this on episodes before, that to be able to enjoy something with your kids that you enjoyed when you were younger and see that it still passes the test of time, if you will. So that definitely does that.
I will say, that was a close one, because we have a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old, and I thought we may have a parenting fail a little bit in, because the 5-year-old started running up to us, all scared. I can't remember the boy's name. He gets beat up, and then his father yells at him, and he screws up the machine at his office, and then we find out that the kids who move in, Kirsten Dunstan, move in, and their parents just died in a horrible accident. It's like, oh, geez, we may have made a bad choice here. It turned out okay.
Yeah, yeah. They just were invested more in the characters that way, I think. That's the way you got to look at it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Very cool, very cool. All right, how about for our Nerd Cave, our adults-only, no kids allowed recommendation? You want to start with that one, or you want me to go first again?
Well, why don't you go ahead? I got to think a little bit.
Okay. All right, cool. Mine is something I just finished the season. It's on HBO Go that I have on my Apple. Yeah, so various Apple devices. It is a series called The Leftovers, which is not about bad spaghetti or anything like that. It's really quite interesting. It's as though basically the rapture has happened. Because all these people they suddenly disappear. Only it's not just good people that have disappeared. And you find that out within the first episode, actually. Is they're talking about people who are, like, obviously not good people. That also, they call them the departed, have departed. And so, of course, there's all this questioning, you know, of what really happened, where did they go, and so forth. But mostly what it is people dealing with the aftermath of that. Why I really enjoyed it, and I think that the first couple of episodes are a bit rough, and you don't quite get invested in the characters yet. You've got to give it some time. So if you watch the first episode and you're kind of like, give it a couple more, and you'll get invested with the characters because you'll get some of their backstory. I think it's well written. It's got a sort of Lost feel to it in that they have multiple characters, one pretty central protagonist and his family, but you have other characters, and certain episodes will focus on those characters and kind of tell their story. And you really get invested in a bunch of different characters, and there's a bunch of different stuff going on. But I think what makes it really interesting, no matter what you believe in and the rest, is that you have all these characters dealing with some level of guilt. And it's survivor's guilt, really, you know? It's as though these people have passed away, and the people left behind feel that in some way, either the reason they're gone is their fault, or the way in which they left things before they were gone is, traumatic, and it makes them feel bad. One episode that I just watched, is towards the end, and this mother, they show the story right before the departure, and she just yells at her kid for having spilled juice over her phone, and that's the last thing she did, you know? And as a parent, it just hits home. Like, I mean, you just are like, oh my gosh, and your heart just, like, you know, wrenches for this character, because how awful that's the last thing that the last interaction that she had with her.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, she, you can tell she was a loving mother and, you know, in the other parts of the story, but it's just like, you know, it makes you think about those kinds of things. Yeah. And there's lots of others, and it is HBO, so, you know, it's got the HBO aspect, but it was, I was surprised, it was nowhere near as gratuitous in either violence or sexuality as most of the HBO stuff, like not even close in either as Game of Thrones and some of the other HBO shows. So I felt like it was, which I think is good, because I think sometimes the gratuity the expense of story, and not so with this one. And it just brings up a lot of really interesting issues. And it's just cool. I thought it was cool and different, and was an interesting concept, if nothing else. So give it a shot.
Okay, The Leftovers. Okay.
Yeah. How about you, sir?
Well, I was a big fan, sort of going along your same lines. Had Showtime for a little bit there, and I really enjoyed the show. And this is totally adult, and it does have gratuitous sex. And not so much the violence, but it was just very well written. It was called Californication, starring David Duchovny. I was not a big fan of X-Files. I did not follow that at all, so I did not really care one way or the other with David Duchovny. But watching him in this, I'm like, dude, this guy's an amazing actor. I love him. And then the writing for the show was phenomenal. Just loved it. The story, I don't know if you know it, is David Duchovny plays a writer named Hank Moody, who is famous for basically one book, one novel. And it was turned into a movie, a Hollywood blockbuster, that was very successful. But he hated the movie because it was nothing that he felt was like the book. He's a very cynical dude, very, you know, sort of the glass is half empty. Bad things happen to him. But he just kind of always, I can't say prevailed, but he always sort of middled out and somehow makes it through to the next whatever happens. But, yeah, I don't know why. I just love Hank Moody. He's a great character. But I lost track of it because I just didn't have Showtime. Then they put it on Netflix, so I was able to catch up. But with Netflix, you have to wait, you know, 2 years for it, the show to come out after it was already released on the Showtime. So series ended. They finally put it on Netflix. I finally got to see the last season. I think it was season 7. And I think I caught wind that people were unhappy with the way it went out. It wasn't a great finale and whatever. But it was funny as I watched it. And this is where I love just binge watching, because I'm able to watch all the episodes at once.
Yeah.
Get a feel for how it's going. I don't have to have this big anticipation for the finale. And as I'm watching it, I'm like, this is perfect Hank Moody. There was no rise or great ending or sad, lowly ending. It was just sort of there in the middle. It was perfect Hank Moody. And I thought it was so great, so appropriate. Yeah, I do believe earlier seasons were better, and it kind of tailed off there at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought the writing was still strong. I don't think it pulled a Dexter, where if you saw Dexter, to me, the finale was like, what? What? Are you kidding? This is awful.
Oh, worst ever.
Yeah, I was so upset with that. But on the flip side, it wasn't like 16 Under, which I thought had one of the best endings ever. So I thought it was there in the middle, right where Hank Moody needed to end up, specifically. I don't want to give it away. He just ended up where I think he should end up. And if you haven't seen Californication, give it a chance. There is a lot of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, basically. but it's just great writing. And if you can get past, it's kind of like Dexter. If you can get past the violence and get the good writing that came out of Dexter, this is sort of the same thing with the sex and the drugs. If you can watch it for the good writing and kind of realize, okay, there's going to be sex and drugs in it, I think you'll be really entertained. But again, this is not for children. Nowhere for children. Anywhere. So, be aware of that.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, good recommendation. I had started that series, too, I think, like you did. And then just a couple episodes in, and then I kind of fell by the wayside. So maybe I'll try picking that baby back up. And check it out. So, cool. Very cool. Well, good recommendations. All right, the last thing we're going to finish with here is our sort of throwback that we're going to do every now and then. And as I was talking to you earlier today, I found out that there is a National Toy Hall of Fame. I don't know if you knew that or not. I didn't before today.
And I only knew because you told me.
That's right. Apparently, they just announced the 12 finalists to be voted upon to enter the National Toy Hall of Fame. And from what it looks like, it's just one toy gets in.
Now, is this just this year, or is this like the first ever time?
No, I don't know when it got started, but there are several that are in there. I think there's 53 that are in there. So it can't be just one per year, because it hasn't been going for 53 years. I know that for sure. But there have been various entries. Like, for example, I know it must be pretty recent, because, for example, I'm looking at it right now, and the Atari 2600 game system was inducted in 2007. So it's like, if it was going for a while, that would have been inducted quite some time ago. You know, one of the other ones, 2003, Alphabet Block. Like, and everything in here pretty much is that deserves to be in there, definitely. You know, the Slinky's in here, the Pogo Stick is in here. And then there's some really kind of goofy ones, like a stick. Literally, a stick is in the, but when you think about it, the stick has been classic. That's a classic toy. The cardboard box is one of them that's in here, too. So some of them are kind of funny. And I'll read off to you the finalists here. And I want you to tell me which one or maybe two of these you would vote for. And then after that, what would you want to nominate from your childhood that you think, or any childhood that you think should be considered possibly for next year? So here's the finalists. American Girl Dolls, which my daughter would love. Bubbles, like literally just the bubbles, not the character bubbles from Powerpuff Girls, but bubbles.
Okay.
Fisher-Price Little People. Hess Truck. Little Green Army Men.
Ooh.
Yeah, right? My Little... Operation. Paper Airplane. Pots and Pans. Rubik's Cube, Slip and Slide, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
So, well, first off, I think they should burn and blow up the Rubik's Cube. I hate that thing.
Personal vendetta against the Rubik's Cube,
exactly.
Huh?
Exactly. Man, that's a tough class if only one or two get in. Because I could see, as weird as it sounds, I could see My Little Pony, because that started in the 80s, and it is just blown up again.
Yeah.
I think it's bigger now than it was back then, which is shocking. How could you not include, like, bubbles and paper airplanes? I mean, those are, like, gimmies. It's like a stick in the box. It's like, dude, if you give out party favors of bubbles, and those kids go crazy. They love them. Love them.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I mean, I remember when we did that in high school in, like, a physics class. I was like, we're allowed to make paper airplanes? Are you kidding me? Let's do this. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, man, I think, like, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and probably the My Little Pony and the American Girl Doll, I think they'll probably have to come in second to some of those other ones that are just like, you cannot have a childhood without Bubble and without Paper Airplane and without Little Green Army Men. I mean, what? Are you kidding me? Why are they not in?
Yeah, I was shocked that they weren't in there. Now, G.I. Joe is in, and it has the old G.I. Joe, but I'm sure it could also include the new ones, too, the whole franchise. Barbie, of course, is in there. Yeah. Hot Wheels is in here. I mean, I've been kind of flipping through what's in here. But a lot of them are more of the sort of like, this toy's been around for ages, the hula hoop.
Yeah.
Jack in the Box. And you're absolutely right. Like, the Bubbles and Little Green Army Men, like, those have to make it in. Like, it shocks me they're not already in.
Yeah.
I was surprised that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was even on the list, frankly. And I think it must have something to do with the sort of recent resurgence in popularity of them. Because to me, that, I think, would be a travesty if it made it in. Now, I know Star Wars is in there, and G.I. Joe's in there, and Barbie's in there, and I think all of those are deserving to be in there. But Ninja Turtles?
That's hard for me to comment on. I think we've talked about this before, you and I. We kind of missed the action figure aspect of it. It was just a little past what we were there for. I mean, we saw the movies and all that, but in the toys themselves, it's a little past. There's like that weird stage where we were sort of out of action figures, but we weren't back into it when we were back in high school collecting. seen some of the cooler Batman and Star Wars stuff. Yeah, some of the newer Star Wars stuff that was coming out.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't there for us at that time. So yeah, that's hard for me to comment on that one. But yeah, I don't know how that beats out some of the others.
Yeah, I just don't see it. You know, I'm like, it. Okay, Barbie, yeah. G.I. Joe, yeah. Star Wars, definitely. I mean, Star Wars changed toys, period. I mean, even if you're not a Star Wars fan, you have to concede that. But some of these others, I mean, you're talking Slinky, you know, like the teddy bear, like, you know, Monopoly, Tinker Toys. I mean, these are like cornerstone toys that aren't this little niche that was basically to sell toys, you know, was just to sell toys in the cartoon.
And even if it's own class, it's got a better representation of something that was so hot for a minute and then it kind of died out, and that's the Rubik's Cube. As much as I hated it, that was the biggest thing that came out. Everybody had to have one. You had to try and solve it. And there's me, stupid Jimmy. I would just peel the stickers off and put them on the right colors. And
I love that you said that. I love that you admitted to that.
Oh, I did. And then once you did that, not that I could have ever solved it anyway, but once you did that, you could never solve it because you totally messed up whatever real science was going on there. So, yeah.
Real science. Okay.
But it's, you know, it's made its own comeback nowadays. So, yeah, I don't get that one. But what do you feel should be in or up that's not in there already?
Yeah, let's talk about the nominations, because I think I agreed with you. I think that the Little Green Army Men have to make it. I could see My Little Pony making it even. But for me, I think one that's not on here that I'd like to nominate is, especially if Ninja Turtles is any kind of showing, is Transformers. Like, I mean, as far as, like, the concept of a toy, where you really have two toys in one, you know, a robot that changes into a vehicle, you know, even just thinking of it in the concept of a toy is pretty unique, I think.
That revolutionized the toy industry, because I remember just the cartoon and then the rumors of his toys coming out, and then GoBots trying to beat him to the market, and it's like, man, that was huge. And then you look at their movies. Their movies, whether you like them or not, it doesn't matter. They're far bigger than the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies were.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think probably more widely recognized, I would think. Most people can recognize the Transformers more so than they would the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
And I'm not against Ninja Turtles. Like, I like Ninja Turtles just fine. I think you have made a good point about us sort of missing that market, you know. And so maybe we're a little bit biased in that regard. But, you know, Transformers are definitely closer to, you know, the Rubik's Cube, you know, and Tinker Toys and the Viewmaster and some of these other ones that I'm seeing on the list here. As far as, like, iconic toys that pretty much almost everybody had, you know, when they were popular. Like, everyone had at least one Transformer.
Totally agree.
So how about you? If there's one that you could recommend that would be on there, maybe it already is, and I'll let you know if it is, but you don't have the list in front of you. One that you're like, this should be in there?
I wouldn't be surprised if this one's in there. If it's not, I don't know why, because although the Atari was big, I'd have to go with Nintendo, the NES, the original. That was huge when we were growing up, and along with that, Super Mario and The Legend of Zelda were two of the biggest games at the time, and I remember everybody, all my friends, they had Super Mario Brothers, and they would just learn to be awesome at it. So I'd go over to their house, and of course I'm Luigi, because that's always the way it goes, and they would play Mario, and they'd like solve it, and then come back around, and they'd play again, and then finally they die or something, and there's me who didn't have Super Mario Brothers playing, and I'm like, all right, I just died on the first level. Back to you. And that's because my loving dad, who waited a whole year after it came out when all my friends already had one, I actually do love my parents, folks, but don't think I'm crazy.
No, I was just going to say, here you go, throwing them under the bus again.
But my dad goes and buys, and I'm happy now, at the time I was not happy, goes and buys the Nintendo package that had the Nintendo Power Magazine, which, what? Why did you get that, Dad? And The Legend of Zelda, which at the time, I'm like, Dad, it's a one-player game, come on! And you're the only one playing. But
now
that I'm older, Legend of Zelda, everybody points to their favorite video game. And usually it's Mario if you're our age, but to me it was Zelda. Legend of Zelda was amazing, awesome, hours and hours of play.
you didn't get to save it like you do nowadays, kid. You had to get a code. You had to make a phone
number.
Enter that code. But, yeah. I think that would have to be in there.
You know, I didn't see that one on here, and there's not like a list like I'm having to scroll through the pictures, but I think you'll be proud to know that the original Game Boy is on here. And I think that, I think if anything, like, you know, Atari was the original game console. Well, Game Boy was the original, like, portable game console. I remember I never had one because it was out of our economic price range.
Yeah.
And, but it was quite the coveted item from my memory.
Yeah,
and revolutionized it.
If you were like me, you had the old, I think it was Tiger handheld games that were like the cheapy
football
or baseball games that were just like really awful graphics, like beep, 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 boom.
Yeah, that's pretty much the noise they would make, too.
I was never allowed
to play it with the noise on because these were, let's be clear, that this was the beginning of, and really parents should be happier that Game Boy's in there than anybody because this was the beginning of, here, child, play with this so you'll shut up while we're driving wherever we're going.
And there were no headphones. There was mute or unmute. That was
it. That's exactly right. Exactly. And you know how it is as a kid. Like, without the sound effects, it's just not the same experience.
No.
So the Game Boy definitely was a step up of those. I love that you brought that up. Tiger games. Oh, my gosh. I can't even. Baseball and football and, definitely classic. Classic. Cool. Well, that's our throwback.
Awesome,
for the week, and I think that wraps up our episode 12.
I think so, sir. We're on a roll, man. We're moving.
That's right. Getting back into the swing of things here. So hopefully you enjoyed it, and we'll get with you guys next week. Yeah, we'll get back on the weekly thing here. So hopefully you
enjoyed
this and you're ready for us to be back.
Exactly. And don't forget to check us out on YouTube, on iTunes, on NerdLocker website, on Facebook, Twitter, all those fun stuff. And until next week, have a nerdy week.